Me and Mac Hanson actually went for a pint after the podcast the last day.
Excuse me, where was I?
We got buried a beef. I was like, hold on, are we actually beefing here? Do we need to go for a pint or something? We chatted out.
Joe presents House of Rugby, United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.
Hello and welcome back to House of Rugby. We are here. We have reached the final stages of the United Rugby Championship. And who would have thought it? Two South African teams in the final. Greg, welcome back.
Jason, welcome back to you as well. How are you? How was your weekend?
Good, good. Strange watching two South African teams. I know our South African fans might think otherwise, but I don't think any of us expected to see the first season of the championship to see both of them in the final.
No way. Yeah, well, did you think so, Lindsay, that the South African teams would be there in the final?
No, I think we definitely pitched maybe like one of them, the Stormers, tipped at the start, which you tipped a couple of weeks ago.
I tipped you weeks back, guys. I said it. I always said if there was any team that was going to beat Leinster, that they didn't have to beat them in the end. The Bulls did that job for them. But
how long ago did you call that?
A good few weeks back. I've been saying it for weeks. They've looked like the stronger team, sure. What have they got now? 15 games unbeaten. So it wasn't much of a call. Like, I was just basing it on the fact they played so well in winning matches.
Yeah, I think they only lost, what, four games, and their last game was back in February against Connacht, which was one of the only Irish teams to go down to South Africa and win on the road. So yeah, they've had the two most consistent teams in the second half of the season, if I'm up for correction, have made the final. Now, if you had said that at the start of the season, obviously my money was on Leinster, but I also hope for a fifth star and it just crumbled. So
yeah, my money was on Leinster up till 10 days ago still. Like, I thought, obviously Stormers and Bulls are most consistent, but Leinster obviously as well. But
yeah,
we kind of spoke about that last week, but I was actually over it. I was over at Royal Ascot and I was over at the Premiership Rugby Final and a couple of times people were like, oh, did you watch the South African Final? And I kept going, South African Final? What? There's no South African League. But I obviously amended two South African teams in the final. But it was a good match, in fairness. They played pretty well. Like, there was a lot of running rugby, a lot of good tries. Evan Roos was unreal again.
He's an absolute powerhouse. Absolutely. I can't lie though, I was like out of breath. Like, it was just, especially the first 20 minutes was nuts. It was frantic. They were killing each other. They were hitting. They were losing their footing. There was turnovers. There was handling errors.
That's the thing about the South African lads is they're so physical. Like, even in the first couple of minutes, like when they were going over for the try, the Bulls number 12 scored a try and Sonatla hit him so hard at the line. He just twisted out and scored. Like, they're just the power down there. Like, I think that's why they got to the final, those guys. It's just the South African lads are unbelievable. I'd say Razzy Erasmus is licking his lips now, getting ready for 2023. Like,
well, that's what I liked was they're actually so unpredictable. Like, so Grobler was going through off that, it was off a line out, if I'm not mistaken. So they were just going through, and I thought, you know, like South African rugby, the physicality, he's just going to go through them. And then all of a sudden, like, he just like defs off little offload, you know, and it was lovely. And I was like, okay, for this season, they have been so unpredictable. They've even lived on the edge with their, like, their discipline has been terrible, but then all of a sudden they'll do just something amazing. And I think the final just epitomised exactly what they brought to the competition.
Yeah.
And considering, obviously, when they first came into the competition, the Cheetahs, the Kings were so poor. Mm. I think I certainly still have that kind of, don't have the same expectation, I suppose. Mm. I know they've been great, but to get to the final, surprising, but it lived up.
It did. Just before we delve into the actual game itself and look at the score and break it down, obviously we will address the elephant in the room.
Yes.
So Rob Balakum was supposed to be on with us this week, but unfortunately Rob is a little under the weather and couldn't make it. So get well soon, Rob. Moving on to the game itself, 18-13 was the final score. I think we said it, a lot of us said it in the build-up to the game. It was always going to be tough for the Bulls to get themselves back up again after that huge win against Leinster, which no one expected, even though South Africans will disagree with us. Someone told me in the pub yesterday, he had a bet down, a fiver. He got the Bulls at 14-1 in a semi-final.
No way.
That shows you what the odds were. But, they took the lead against the Stormers in the final at the weekend. And I think they just kind of ran out of steam, I suppose, so to speak. Like, it's tough to get yourself up for so many games. No one really expected the Bulls at the start of the season to be in that final.
No, they didn't. But the Stormers had beaten the Bulls twice already in the URC. Narrowly, I think it was 19-17 and it was 30 points to 26. And then they lost narrowly again. Like I said, the Bulls are snapping. They just have that, obviously, the mental battle against Stormers. They've lost three times now this season. But it was a great game. Like, they put it up to them all the way to the last minute. And they had to come down. Stormers had to come down and score a try and a drop goal to put them ahead at the end. And still, there was a couple more chances with Aaron Desai from Bulls nearly got away with a try there at the end as well. So I thought it was a really good showing for poor conditions as well. It was wet underfoot down there. So, like, props to the South African teams. Like they well deserved it.
Stormers are missing Zastan as well. Lina Zast, who's the top scorer in the championship this year, like, and still managed to get a win. Yeah. But obviously, Ruse. I think Ruse, is it the players, Riders player, and URC? He won all three awards this year that you could win. Like, I mean, that guy has been a phenomenal revelation this year. And he's in the Springbok squad now as well, isn't he?
Yeah, there's been obviously, I think, 13 players between both squads have been called into the summer test series against Wales. So that's testament to how well the teams have done. But to be honest, if I think Bulls would be kicking themselves. I thought certainly the first half they had the upper hand against the Stormers. But I think... they'd just be kicking themselves with, you know, they'd get breaks and then they'd leave themselves isolated. And then it was just, you know, it was a battle of the breakdowns with so many turnovers, a breakdown for both teams. So
there's a lot of handling errors. Yeah.
A lot of handling errors. The underfooting, you said, I think I seen the scrum and it was, you never want to see this kind of wave in the scrum. But I was like, I'd say it's actually, it's so hard when the, when your underfoot is so soft to actually get a grip and get some, you know, what your stability and your power in the scrum. So I thought it was a cracking game. But if I'm honest, I think Bulls could have, gone in at half time a little bit further up.
Yeah, they conceded 7 penalties in the first half. So, like, I mean, you look, if you rack up 7 penalties in the first half in any game, like, you're doing yourself no favours.
Yeah, you want to keep that. Yeah,
that's your quota for the whole game.
Oh, you can't be giving away 7 penalties. 100%. We'd normally, before we move on, like, we'd look at a try of the week and a jukebox of the week. Like, because there's only one game, we're just going to do one try and one jukebox. But because of the way it happened, we're actually giving the try and the jukebox to the same movement from Ruse. So Ruse scoring that try, and how many players did he bash through to score that? He must have bashed through three or four.
Five. There's just so many, and I thought he was stopped, and then he just kept powering over, and then this big just giant right arm just put it down. I was like, you had actually no right to even move your arm, let alone score the try. Like, he was phenomenal.
Yeah, 100%. The guy came in behind him, kind of like, not truck and trailer, but gave him that extra shunt that kind of pushed him on and getting in the reach out. It was just incredible finish. Like, he deserves all the accolades and the titles, I think, for this year.
I think there was one big hit in him. And the commentator was like, that's what, you know, what were the Bulls going to do? And basically they had three men to stop him. Like, and now three simultaneously just for the one tackle, just to put him down. And he didn't even lose gain line nor break it. It was just like, he stood still where he was. Yeah. It was just like...
And you know what was great to see from the final was that, I know they only had 50% capacity because in COVID still pretty bad down in South Africa, but they sold it out, the 50% capacity. Yeah. And they probably would have double sold it if they could, like, which was really good to see. And the viewership on this podcast has been really good from South Africa as well. So it's great to have South African fans listening, watching, supporting their guys. Like, it's unreal. I think it's going to be great for the European Championship as well next year now.
Yeah, they were saying that. I can't remember where I was. I listened to the Punditry at the weekend on Premier Sports or somewhere else on the weekend. But like, you have to remember that all these South African fans for the last few years have been playing against New Zealand teams and Australian teams, having to get up at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning to watch their teams. Now they can sit down and relax on a Saturday at 6:30 and watch their teams play. Yeah. Or whatever. So it's an hour of the difference, I guess. Or it could be a 5:30 or 6:30 or 7:30 kickoff. Think of the difference. Like, I mean, if you had to get up and watch Munster, I find it tough sometimes to watch Munster at 7:30 at night. Mine 7:30 in the morning. You know what I mean? So yeah. I think that brings it. It brings it back into their time zone. They can go out, they can enjoy themselves, they can follow their teams and even go into the matches and stuff as well.
And that's the thing with the South Africa. I was lucky enough to play in the Cape Town Sevens, and it's my favourite leg by far out of all 10 because of the culture. We got straight off the bus when we arrived in Cape Town. You're singing, dancing, cheering, everyone's happy. And there's obviously in Sevens, there's like, tens and tens of games, right? And every single time there's a try, they all score. They're delighted for everyone just scoring a try. Like,
yeah,
lovely people down there. So I think it's really good for rugby now. South Africa have kind of got, obviously, their international team's class. Yeah. Their club teams are really good now as well. And I wouldn't like to be Wales going down there this summer. Like,
no, big time. You can actually feel the buzz nearly through the telly, you know, and two teams. I think the last time they met in a final was 2010. And the Bulls actually won that. You know, it was obviously Super Rugby for them and their league, whatever. But you could just see the buzz and obviously, like, no more than our provinces, that they were just up for it. And yeah, there was that bit of camaraderie, but there was like tit for tat and dig for dig. And they were just buzzing off and you could feel the energy. So I would have loved to have seen a full capacity stadium. But like, when we played the Barbarians and we played South African women's team, like you said, like, we were up there, we were having dinner at the aftermatch and they just started singing and the whole room stopped. We're like... It was like goosebumps, the energy. And then we all got up and, like, we didn't know the songs, but we could, you know, clap along to the beat. And they're just a nation that just loves their rugby, and you can just feed it off them.
They're so passionate. But I think it sometimes gets the better of them, because in that game, Cornel Hendricks had a head-high tackle on Rua Pinel, was it?
Rua Pinel. Like, I just wanted to ask you about that. Like, do you reckon, like, it could have been red, couldn't it?
Do you know what, man? I just think this day and age... Anything above the neck, it just has to be red straight away because it's so dangerous. Mm. Like, we'll talk about concussion further on in this podcast. Yeah. Like,
and the two yellow cards in the Premiership final.
Two yellow cards in the Premiership, which should have probably been red.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would kind of used to have the opinion of, tough love, get up, man. This day and age, like, you got to be watching your neck, your head, your brain. I think it should have been red. Anything above here needs to be red from now on, in my opinion. What do you think?
I think we need consistency now with this because some weeks it's like we're arguing whether it was a yellow or red. I think just to... And to just save players and referees just making a decision that it's just across the board. Right, like, we're always trying to look for mitigating factors, but each player is different how they're going to react. And, you know, you can't, how are you going to gauge the force just because it's hitting somewhere? Do you know what I mean? So I think if we just level it across the board, then above the head.
Yeah, exactly.
We've seen too many players retire over the last few years, like at 27, 28, 29, because of concussion.
There's so many lawsuits going on at the moment, like behind closed doors of players who can't remember playing in finals and matches. And all. It's really, really sad. And it's only going to get worse from here.
Of course.
And obviously a counter argument to this is, I was actually at the Premiership final, as I said, and we saw the high tackle and we're like, oh no, it's going to be red now. Game's going to be over, is what most people's opinions were. But then it's like, okay, the game might go in the favour of the team that didn't get the red card. Because I think these people's health, like, do you know what I mean? And obviously, initially, everyone's going to be giving out all red cards, games ruined. But eventually, it will teach players to start hitting low again. Do you know what I mean? 100%. Get below the nipples, hit anywhere below there. And it'll teach players to be better. And young kids coming up will just be better tacklers, be a safer game.
Yeah. Well, it's a professional game. So, like, if you're in any line of work that you need training, like, you train all the time. And you know how much time we spend on tackle tech. So, I mean, there's no excuse really for, especially in the elite professional game.
Yeah, I've actually seen kids now that are starting to get this, roll out this new equipment, like, and their tackle pads that go onto their legs with targets on them, right? So that, like, they see the three targets, but it's all below the waist. So it's teaching the kids to try and get 100 points to get in and tackle right on the money, like.
That's
what you need.
Well, the big impact in women's side is that our tackle tech is so poor because we're not obviously starting it from a young age. So I think if we can start women younger at younger age, and the same thing that, you know, you're tackling below the knees, because a lot of our concussion is whiplash, so it's all high tackles and you're kind of being shoved back. So I think all in all, whether we're talking about male or female, I think just to grassroots and just get in. Then there's no, you know, no one's worrying about anything. Even the players themselves, like, there's no fear. You just, it's muscle memory and you just, you know, it's second nature to you.
It becomes automatic. Then.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%.
Definitely. Yeah. Looking back at the game, I mean, like, they only lost, I know we're saying that the Stormers were good, like, but it was only a 5-point game in the end. Like, and he had that break from Kurt Lee. There's a guy we've been watching. He actually, I think he got called into the South African squad, did he? Kurt Lee Rinza. He's the guy that's been stepping. Yeah. He's basically like another version of Cheslin Kopy, like, just, you know, on
his
the way up.
Like,
his footwork is outrageous. Like, he made it, they just couldn't get it through the hands in the end. But
yeah, I played against him on the sevens tour.
Did you?
Oh my God, it's like chasing shadows trying to catch him. Like, 1v1, there's no hope you tackle him. Like, he just transports when he steps. Yeah. Like, and even you can see it on the 15 side game. He's unbelievable. He deserves to be where he needs to be. But the South African lads, same with Sanatla, man. Honestly, 1v1, good luck. Like, there's no tackling these guys.
How are they producing these players? Because there's so many of them. Oh, like, it's not only are they like unbelievable tacklers and like at speed, but I've never seen players being able to step as good as some of the South African wingers.
Thank God.
I don't understand it. Like, it's just the footwork is outrageous. Yeah. So we just bring some over here and start teaching some of our players.
We find the one Jordan Larmour here and again, you know, just footwork to be able to change, you know.
Yeah, Jordan Larmour's the only player we have like that, like, can step like that, whereas they've got countless front of players.
And they all seem to come through the blitz block of the sevens team. Like, they're all just jumping, like Cecil Africa, all those guys. So that obviously came through there. They must be doing it from a young age, developing them up to be like that, like, which is just, all their wingers are unbelievable. Tambwe for the Bulls as well, had an unreal game. He did actually a lot of the dirty work Tamway did. He was cleaning up at the back. He's doing a lot of kicking, doing a lot of rucking. I was impressed with him.
He hit an unbelievable tackle, did he not, midfield?
He got a great tackle.
Sorry, just inside 22 when he got up and got turned
over. And turned it over, So I think Razzie really likes him. Like, he'll be playing in the Springbok team as well, I believe. So it was a great game all around. They deserved to be there. And it was a lovely finish, wasn't it, with the kids?
Ceremony with the kids. I was just about to say, the kids giving them, the local kids giving the medals out to the players and stuff. I love that kind of stuff, like, you know?
Yeah.
It's the kind of stuff you like.
It was really,
it's
really
all good, so.
It was a great day because sometimes you see the players coming on getting their medals and they just kind of stroll through, handshake with whoever and go cheering. But this time you see the players engaging with the kids.
They're quite happy. The kids are here as well.
Moment. And think about that kid. Oh my God. And give a medal to whoever. Like, so it's really inspiring, those kids. I think they got the idea from the AFL. AFL have been doing it in their grand final, or ARL, one or the other.
Yeah.
For the last couple of years, they've been doing it there. So it's a lovely idea.
That's something that we should look at across other finals rather than having some, no offense, having some bloody chairman or president just go, here's your medal.
Exactly.
And the player doesn't even look at him and just gives him one of those kind of handshakes.
And there's politics involved with that. Do you know, whereas kids and grassroots and exactly what our pillar, what the game, like stands for. 100%. You know, the game of rugby. And, 100%. You know, it sends out a huge message. And I thought it was lovely. I thought it was a lovely finish. And
lovely
I thought the difference in the players, like getting on their knees and, you know, I think
engaging
they forgot.
With the kid.
Exactly. They just forgot who they were. They're just like, oh, this kid is, you know, you've made their day. You know, it's a big final for you and you're winning, you're getting a medal, but this kid will remember this for the rest of their lives.
I think it's even more, it kind of like, it stands out more the fact that it's two South African teams in South Africa. Because I know you've watched the Chase and the Sun documentary, so do you. Like, a lot of those South African players, a lot of those Stormers players, those Springbok players, they came from nothing and rugby is what brought them out and brought and gave them a life. You know what I mean? Like, and to them, like, to... Do you know, that could have been the next Sia Khaleesi, like one of those kids could be the next cousin Kobe. And he's like, remember that time I shook this guy's hand in the URC final?
Yeah.
And that could be the inspiration for them to go on and be Blitzbacher or Springboks or pro players with the Stormers or whatever it is, you know?
Humble beginnings to greatness. And that's the legacy they leave.
That's what it's all about.
That's what they live by.
But what does this mean going forwards for the South African teams? I mean, if you look at this, like they're after getting two teams in the final, they absolutely blitzed us in the second half of the season. They came into this tournament off the back of a Lions tour, missing a lot of their players. They were ravaged by COVID more than any of the other teams in the other countries in the URC. So the first half of the season, they were playing basically with one arm and one leg, essentially. You know what I mean? And next season, they're coming straight in, fresh, all their players. Hopefully, they'll be able to take off that capacity thing going on with the stadium, so they'll be able to get full capacity in. So they're actually probably going to come in for a better stand. Now, you are adding in European rugby in there, which is going to take a lot out of them. But I think they're probably going to be even tougher to beat next year.
See, I'm wondering, like, so we kind of have this, I think we would have brought it up in shows, obviously, like, say, Leinster trying to juggle their internationals, European Cup, and they've done it really well. And I know I got a tweet during the week, you know, saying about Leinster were tired. I wasn't saying physically tired because it was good rotation, but mentally tired to get up for a long season. Like, so we're talking about September all the way through to now and all the games they would have had and mentally to get up for that. But I think for the South Africans, I think they're going to come in and really stir the pot, which I'm excited to see. They're going to ruffle a lot of feathers in European competition. But what will that mean for how well they did in the URC? How are they going to balance? Whereas they're, you know, it's a big pool of players now to try and accommodate their series. Obviously, we have a World Cup coming up in 2023. So how will Razzy manage all of his players then? You know, so it's an extra dynamic, which I'm interested to see how they do. But I do think they're going to come in buoyant mood now, as I said, to put another trophy in the Southern Hemisphere on South African soil. So I think they're going to ruffle feathers. I think they're going to be successful. But I'd be interested at the cost of a different trophy.
Yeah,
I think they're going to do, I think they'll do really well in the Champions Cup. They're going to spice it up a little bit. Love to see them against the English teams and the French teams, going down there, just kind of bullying them a little bit. But I also think there's an element of the South African teams not being respected this season because, oh, they're new in, like fresh into the tournament. And probably,
like Mac Hansen, like not getting respected by you.
Oh my God, it's like a broken on the record. Like, me and Mac Hansen actually went for a pint after the podcast the last day.
Excuse me, sorry.
We got buried a beef. I was like, hold on, are we actually beefing here? Do we need to go for a pint or something? We chatted out. He's a good lad. We're now mates. We exchanged numbers. So best of luck to Mac down in New Zealand. We'll probably grab another pint when he comes back and you're more than welcome to join then.
Well, thanks very much for letting us break into your bromance. We're privileged.
Bromance!
If it wasn't for me and Jason, you wouldn't have, you know, you wouldn't have...
If it wasn't for you, Jason, and the whole backroom team, you're stirring the pot, like, trying to make it a problem between me and Mac.
We get you, we get your followers, we get your bromances, we have fire extinguishers when you get born on the show.
Fear,
we got your back.
I won't be taking a side of the fence anymore in this podcast, anyway. Anyway, back to my point about the South Africans. I think the other teams in the URC didn't have as much respect for them and preparation for them mentally as they should have, because probably a bit of a residue from the Cheetahs and the Lions and Southern Kings, like, South African teams aren't able for the URC. And then they caught them on the hop when they were prepared at the second end of the season, going down to South Africa, like in the climate, in the conditions. And the other thing is what Razzy's done really well is he's brought all the best players back to playing club rugby in South Africa. Mm. So they're just together all the time. He's really good culture built in South African rugby in general. So, but I think that now for next season, the URC, the rest of the teams would be mentally prepared, like big monk down in South Africa now, guys. You ready to go for this? Whereas this season, it was kind of like, send down the academy, lads. Like, it'd be fine. Do you know what I mean? So it'll probably be a different mindset going down next year, hopefully.
Yeah, it does. It does. Like, even when you saying, like, it wasn't great to see 31,000 at the match. I mean, I pointed it out, like, and I was rightly told otherwise by South African fans. I pointed out, like, if we get to these European matches next year, or even the final, there'll be no fans. Because I remember looking at those bloody Cheetahs matches and those Kings matches. And it was a joke because there was like 500 fans in the stadiums.
Yeah.
They just, for some reason, the Cheetahs and the Kings, I think there was something political going on with the Kings, and then the Cheetahs just didn't have much of a following or whatever it was. But there was no one, and I was expecting the same thing to happen again. But like, the Slav fans have proved me wrong. Like, and it's only going to get better because the restrictions are going to be lifted. Like, but they are there and they're out to support these. As I said, these are four big heavy hitting like franchises that, like, the Lions have got the 3 Super Rugby finals, the Stormers have won it, I think the Bulls have won it. Yep. They've all won it, like, at some stage. Like, they've beaten New Zealand teams, they've been up there. But at the same time, no one expected them to be good in year one.
Exactly, yeah.
That's the thing, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but this is the thing, right? We didn't expect South Africa to win the last World Cup because they came in and they were playing pro rugby leading up to that. And I think they like that. I think they like coming in under the radar. They know how popular rugby is there and they're a proud nation. So we get into that false sense of security, like, the, you know, no expectation from them. And then it's just like, bam.
But I think there's no hiding for any kind of South African team anymore.
Not now.
They're seen as the best, probably arguably one of the best rugby teams in the world at the moment, because obviously Crusaders are class, New Zealand are class, but South African, across the board, they're all good now.
Yeah.
And I think it's coming down to their conditioning, as I said at the start of the podcast. They're all so big, so powerful, so fit. The SNC teams down there must just be unbelievable top level guys. Like, so the rest of the URC are going to have their wits about them next year.
Yeah. It's only going to benefit the home nations and stuff, like, because now you're getting a chance to play against these Springbok players regularly, and these, as you said, these big conditioned players. And it's only going to help you when you get to your Autumn Internationals and get to your World Cups. Because, I mean, how often do Ireland get to play South African players normally before this? How often would an Irish team take on any Springboks? Whenever, every couple of years, we might schedule in all international, and then all of a sudden you made them in the World Cup and you get blown out of it.
Yeah.
Now you're playing them regularly, like, and it's only going to make our players better.
Exactly.
You're sent home with some sellotape to piece yourself back together. And that'll be the one good thing, I think, about the semi-final loss, not only for Leinster, is to, you know, like, how are they going to, like, create plan B against the more physical teams, but even for Ireland, you know, because as a nation, we're never going to be, unless we get some chemical to help us grow, I mean, we're never going to be a big nation, you know, it's just in their DNA.
We're not going to be able to compete with them physically. Like, you have
and that's why we need to have our own game plan against Southern Hemispheres, and I don't think we're going to get it unless we're actually playing them. So I think... Yeah, hugely positive.
Yeah. I could see one of them coming in and winning the Champions Cup at this rate next year. Like,
well, I can't wait for the French and England that you've said they're going
to
be fighting.
I just send them down to Toulouse or Toulon down to play Stormers or something. Oh, what a battle. Like,
skin and hair flying.
There'll be casualties on that one.
Yeah. You should bring the pod down there.
Great stuff. Now, before we move on to the news, guys, as predicted, Connacht's Cian Prendergast is heading to New Zealand this summer. And we had a chance to catch up with him recently to speak about his journey and his life with Connacht.
I played a small bit of minis when I was like 10, but look, I didn't really have much interest in it. Like, I don't think I was fond of standing around in the cold. Like, I think I wanted to play soccer. I think when I was younger, I wanted to play for Manchester United in soccer. So that was the thing. Like, so I was like, I want to play soccer. And I played Gaelic football and I did athletics and all that. So kind of tried my hand at everything, but didn't really fully start playing rugby. I knew how to play rugby. I'd played with my dad. I'd played in the backyard and I'd played with my friends on the green and stuff. So I fully committed to it when went to Newbridge. Wasn't that good now until I was about like 15 and I hit a bit of a growth spurt. I fancied myself as a bit of an out half. I thought I was going to be the next Johnny Sexton, like, but no, I was, and then they were like, why don't you try second row or back row? Because I think I went from like 5'10 to 6'4 in a summer or something. And they were like, you should probably try back row or second row. I was like, you know what, I will, yeah. And that was it. I got a phone call off Noel Mack during lockdown in like about April, I think, lockdown or May. And it was like, listen, we don't have a place for you. And look, the world came crashing down around me at that time. I didn't know what I was going to do. And then about 24, 36 hours later, I get a phone call from Eric. And he was like, we'd like to offer you a place in the Connacht Academy. And look, I'll be forever grateful for that because it was a second chance for me. And then, look, like, you have conversations with lads and you're chatting to lads and they're saying they got an offer in Leinster. And at the time, you're very jealous, but look, I wouldn't change my path for anything, really, because everyone was really nice introducing themselves, like people like Peter Romani and Joshua Nafleer coming up to me and like offering help and telling me, like, if I need this, come to me, like, I'll sit down with you and have a look at this if you want and stuff like that, which was awesome. Like, kind of like, they nearly sit down with me for like an hour and a half on the computer and just look at things with me, which was phenomenal for me as an individual. And then like Andy and Paul and Simon and Caddy are all like, they were phenomenal, like, in terms of like just trying to help you, but obviously they demand a standard as well, so they're saying this is what you have, like, this is what we expect of you, and they give you like a small bit of leeway at the start, but then once you're in, like, it's, you have to understand it straight away. Like, definitely it would be a dream come true. Like, I think any player in Ireland, I think if you ask them, you get to go on a tour to New Zealand for however long, 4 or 3 weeks, they'd bite your hand off. Like, it's, it would be an incredible experience. Like, it's it would be awesome. But like, look, if it happens, it happens. And I like to think I've done well this season and I've made great progress as a player. So look, like, I'm at peace with whatever happens, because to be honest, the season has been great for me so far and I've learned a lot. So
great stuff. Just seems like a top lad, doesn't he, in general? You know what I mean? It's just a nice guy. He's been through a lot, didn't give up on his career. And yes, you are going to New Zealand. Just a shot a few weeks ago. So I'd say he's over the moon.
I'm delighted for him. If you're listening, Keane, fair play to you. I think you've been a standout for Connacht. I think you've been a standout player. We've spoken for weeks, haven't we, Greg, about rewarding players. And I think certainly for me, he's been one that needs to be rewarded. And I hope he takes this opportunity.
Yeah, he's literally that saying of, be so good you can't be ignored.
Yeah.
He was just constantly, how many man of matches did he get, like, playing out in the sports ground? So consistent. He's really young as well, which I'd love to see Andy Farrell just going, yeah, bring him in, he's done the job. I hope he gets a good few minutes down there now. That's the next thing for him to get in. I'm not going to make a call.
The fact that we have the Maori games, like, he's going out, he's guaranteed to at least start the two of those. So like, that's the Maori games, definitely the midweek games.
Without a doubt, he'll
at least start him, which I think that's so good that we have those games, a good old fashioned tour. We said it multiple times, because if it was just 3 tests against the All Blacks, he might not have got the minutes. He might not have been brought in the first place.
Yeah. And that's my first time actually seeing him have a proper interview where he's kind of candid. He seems like a really nice guy. Like, I'd only ever seen him aggressive on the pitch or some at the RPI Awards collecting an award. Like, seems like a really genuine guy, down to earth. He's like, I'm at peace. I just had a good season, which is nice. He's not cocky, like a nice humble guy. So based off that, I think he's going to go really far.
Well, I think the fact that he said about second chances, he was in for the Six Nations camp as a development player, so he would have picked up an awful lot. I think, you know, when you go into Ireland camp, there's nowhere to hide. You have big personalities, as you know, that call you out, and that's what you need, and it's make or break. So it seems like he's taken that opportunity, a bit like Tadhg Byrne, who would have had a second opportunity when he was let out from Leinster, and just maybe changes your attitude. Not that he had one before, but to look at the glass half full, half empty.
It's mad to think the academy system, that guys we could have lost along the way. Like, you could have lost him if Eric didn't pick up the phone and call him. And the likes of, another one example in Connacht is Conor Fitzgerald. He got dropped by Munster and was going to do his college degree. And he got a call off Connacht to come up and have a trial. And now he's a senior player in Connacht.
He's class.
Yeah, class. Like, imagine how many lads have slipped through the ropes like that. But then you suppose you look at the RFU and we only have 4 professional teams. Like, and that's then 4 academies with 10 to 20 guys in it. And there's how many unbelievable private schools and public schools playing rugby. There's guys slipping through the net. So that's the nature of it, really, isn't it?
That's it. Looking at the Irish squad itself, I suppose, when we look at the names that kind of popped out. Well, first of all, our boy Mac is in, as we predicted. Of course, he's going to be there.
Congrats, Mac.
looking at the guys, okay, like, there's obviously the usual names are in there that we expected, but Jordan Larmour getting called back in, that's good to see. Obviously, he's been in incredible form recently. Jimmy O'Brien is in there, another good one to see. Kieran Frawley's in there. It's a good person.
I'm delighted
to
see him.
Yeah, Harry Byrne, another one again. So they really seem like,
what do you think about
set
Harry's
on the fact that they really want to get Harry in there, like over Ross or anyone else. So I don't know. I still personally haven't seen enough of him yet. I haven't seen enough of him for everyone. Obviously, they see more of him in training and stuff, but I haven't seen enough of him for matches for this guy is going to be the saviour, or is going to be the guy that can step up and replace Johnny Sexton or be a deputy or overtake Carberry at the moment. So be interesting to see if he gets a start, and surely he'll get a start in one of those Maori games.
He's only 34 caps for Leinster, which I find strange considering like there's so many games. I think he's very injury prone. And I heard a commentator last night about it saying, you know, must be awkward at their dinner table where your brother's standing there not after going. So
I saw my hair went out to Ross. I played with Ross coming up and I was friendly enough to him. I was like, oh, imagine that. He's obviously delighted for his younger brother.
Of course, but still, yeah.
It's mixed emotions though, isn't it?
Mixed emotions. We had Ross on the pod a few weeks ago and he's like, he knows how good he is. He just wants that chance again. And he's like, I want to be in the Irish shirt. So say that's not an easy pill for him to swallow. Who knows, you could still get called out.
Big time.
They must see something in Harry though. It's kind of like, because he hasn't pulled up any trees really over since he's come in. Like, and we keep saying, oh, this guy's class, he's brilliant. Like, but
maybe
what has he done? I
was trying to think to myself, like, what is Andy Farrell and Mike Hatton sitting down and going, why are they picking Harry over Ross? Yeah. And I think it's because Harry plays a bit of 12 as well. I know Ross could play 12, but Harry 12 has been playing 12 with Harry, whereas Ross is at 10 this year. So maybe it's like, I'll bring him down, he can cover a centre position for us if we need. That's a good point. I think that's what's pushed him to get down there instead of Ross.
Then they brought Frawley. They have...
Frawley can play 10 as well. Yeah. And centre. Yeah.
So it was kind of strange. I don't know. I think this... From what I've heard from Harry in training, he's just a lot more confident and that bit more like rootless 10. Like he's a bit more like the Johnny Directon. Now, again, take that with a pinch of salt. You know, it's hearsay. But I think it was the Glasgow game in the quarterfinal. Did he come on? And I just felt he did dictate it. He did a lovely show and go. We made a break. He was giving balls on the gain line, which is very Johnny-esque as well, which you need in that type of game. So maybe, like you said, we haven't seen enough of him because he's only had the short amount of experience. It's hard when you've seen Ross being so consistent. But maybe there's just a different edge to him as a 10 that you need kind of just that more dominant character to kind of dictate your team.
So. There could be other elements to it as well, and the fact that maybe they know what Ross can do. He's played so consistently all season, and maybe they want to see Harry exposed at the international level, where Ross loads of caps under his belt already. They know what he can do. They're like, let's give Harry a crack, see what he can do. And maybe they're all in the mix then for the World Cup next year.
Yeah.
There's so many ways you could look at it.
It's a fair point.
Do you know what I mean? But like, I love to see Jimmy O'Brien in there. Good mate of mine.
He's had a great season. He's had a great season. Like, I mean, he's there on merit 100%. He's really had a good season.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough to get into that test squad for New Zealand with the back three that's there, but he'll give it a go.
He's another guy that's been rewarded for just being consistent. Like, I think our poor friend at SICK, Robert Balogun, obviously missed out, which is a good one for Jimmy getting in there. But I think there's a clear kind of two teams in that selected squad. There's a clear Maori midweek team. There's a clear first string team to go against New Zealand. And which I think there's no one really that missed out in that back line for me. Obviously, Robert, we just mentioned. But I would have liked to see Nathan Doak going down there.
We said that, but... Do you know, I mean, maybe you probably could have left Murray at home, couldn't you? I'm rotting it and dope, maybe.
No. This is my God.
Well, what is your thoughts on that?
Swiftly moving on to the forwards. Nothing too crazy there. Jeremy Lachman, there's a guy, some people might agree with me, disagree with me. He was playing some serious rugby there a couple of seasons ago, and then he got a bad injury. Has struggled to find the form since he came back, but he's a damn good player.
Yeah,
and we don't have an awful lot of props there at the moment. And it's good to see him get out there and give it a go, because at his best, he can be a very good prop. He's had an up and down season, but he is a decent player.
Yeah,
really,
and that'll probably go well. Just maybe a bit of confidence, 5 weeks together in the camp.
That's it.
Bring him along.
Well, Joe McCarthy's in there as well. That's running. Ty Byrne is back in. Ty Byrne hasn't played since the Six Nations, I don't think.
No.
So that's good to see him there. He must be on the mend and nearly back, if that's the case.
Kieran Treadwell getting pulled back in again.
Yeah, Kieran Treadwell being pulled back in. Coombs is in there as well after only coming back recently. Obviously, we said Kieran Prendergast is in there. Nick Timoney's in there.
What do you think of his selection, and will he get some game time? Because obviously he is one man who needs reward, and he's had a Timoney? Huge...
Yep. Yeah, he's a guy. He's not gonna break into that.
Don't see him getting into that back row. No. But he should be rewarded for a really, really standout season. For us,
it's a tough one. I suppose the last few weeks, Conan hasn't been playing his best rugby. Doris hasn't been great the last couple of weeks either. Vanifier is still a class, so there could be someone could break in to maybe that eight jersey. I think Vanifier is not lost in losing his spot, but I think someone could break in and maybe take Conan's jersey if his form keeps slipping, because you've got three or four back rows there banging on the door. You just don't know come New Zealand.
Yeah. Actually, a question for you, for both Munster men, actually, because Jerry Flannery was saying last night that Jack O'Donoghue was one name he felt was left out. Now, if I'm right, and I'm not a Munster fan, but I wore my Munster outfits today, Jack O'Donoghue was the Munster player of the year. Am I right?
Yeah, he's been fantastic this year, but...
Thoughts? Should he make that?
It's tough. Once again, who do you drop?
I think it's really tough, Jack O'Donoghue not getting brought as well, because he obviously came, he was like up and coming back row a couple of years ago, got his cap, and was like, this guy's going to push on and play 100 caps for Ireland. Then he slipped off a bit of form, but this season he's been incredible. Mm. Like Keane Prendergast, every week he's nearly getting man of the match. He's captain Munster, so consistent. He's really intelligent bloke as well. I know him years, so he'd be able to run a line out for you, covers the whole back row nearly. It's just such a selection
captain
headache.
Captain Munster as well, so he's got that leadership skills. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
It's leadership skills. It's such a selection headache, obviously, for Andy Farrell. Another guy that I think missed out as well is Conor Oliver, who's been so consistent. And you could obviously interchange him and Nick Timoney. I just think very similar players. Maybe Nick Timoney gets through a lot more. I think he had 20 tackles or something in his last couple of games.
Maybe that's ridiculous.
Why Nick just got in at Conor. But I think he's another guy that could have been brought down. Yeah. But we're mentioning all these guys, going down there, how long are they down there? For 5 weeks?
5 weeks, yeah.
I'd say more guys are going to get flown down.
Well, yeah. Hopefully. I think it's a good headache for us to have. And I think the same thing, that was one point actually Jerry made as well, was that Jack Donoghue is a big line-out option as regards a caller. Like Pete O'Mahony really is the standout now at the minute for the line-out. And like we've seen that with Stormers and Bulls, like I thought Bulls were like fabulous in their line-out, you know, and their set piece, and it's so key. So internationally, set piece is going to be so key if we're going to, you know, go down, you know, to New Zealand and make, whether it's a Maori game or against the All Blacks themselves, like your set piece is key. So especially line out, like Leinster faltered in the semi-final for their line out, I thought, in their set piece overall. So for me as the very proud forward, I think, it's a good headache to have, but it'll be interesting.
It's going to be a good tour, lads. I mean, I don't know if it's just me, like, but this is the most excited I've been for an Irish tour in a long time. Because I think it's because, like, for two reasons, the fact that haven't had a summer tour in a while because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And second of all, then going back to that traditional format. Like, you know, I keep saying it, come back to that traditional format of the two midweek games and the three. It feels like we're, it's like an extra bonus Lions tour that we're having them. And it's the All Blacks as well. And Ireland are playing well, good squad. It's going to be class. That's going to be a little mini Lions tour for us to watch in the summer. Like,
do you think they can go down and win the series?
I think, I don't see why not, to be honest with you. I mean, I maintain they will win at least one test. And probably lose a test, and then it'll come down to just they're deaf. Normally, you'd go down with the mindset like come back over the years, like, and you'd be like, not a hope.
Yeah,
but you can see them winning it. They probably won't win the series, but they could.
Well, I liked that nice conundrum where we probably, if we're going to lose it, we definitely win a game and we've had good performances. And yeah, but you're right. Like, we go down there and, like, you know, we're optimistic going, oh, if we're winning a score or it's not double figures that we've lost by. But I would like to see it, but I don't want us to then lose the run of ourselves. But we're going to win the World Cup next year.
We won't get pumped down there. Like, but there was times when we used to go to New Zealand not that long ago, going back 4, 5, 6 years ago, like, and you go down and you'd lose 60-0.
Still remember that. I was sure I was a young fella coming up as a teenager just breaking into the Munster Academy. I'll never forget Ireland losing 60-0against New Zealand.
That's not that long ago. Like.
Oh my God, man. It's embarrassing. Like, I just couldn't believe it. And that, as you're saying there, Boaty, the fact that we're now being like, we could go down there and win, like, it's such a positive place to be. That we've gone that far in a couple of seasons. Like,
we're not afraid of the All Blacks anymore. We're not afraid of
No, and do you know what else? Well, we're going to offer you, because your little bromance is just interrupted for next couple of weeks. Me and Jason will be your company and we can support Matt together. Is that all right?
Yeah, that suits me.
Right, moving on from Irish, because I know we could sit down and talk about the Irish team and the New Zealand tour for another hour, I'd say. But moving on, Premiership Rugby Final. You were at it over the weekend.
I was.
Cracking game. Thankfully, Leicester won, and great little story there with Freddie Burns getting the last minute drop goal, who in his first Premiership Final, a guy who's has been a servant to the Premiership over the last how many years, decade and a bit, but what was it like over in Twickers?
Yeah, it was nearly sold out, I'd say, like 95%. It was unbelievable, which is great because Saracens were in the final, and Saracens have following. They just don't have a massive following, which is, for some reason, I find it really weird because they've been so dominant for the last couple of years, but they don't have great travelling fans. The place was full of Leicester fans screaming their heads off. I actually thought the game was pretty boring up until it started pretty quick, but obviously nerves and whatever's going on. And then the middle of the game was just like so much kicking. There wasn't much happening, very tactile. And then Freddie Burns comes on and gets his moment in the sun, and he just kicks it over, which is unbelievable. But I was watching it and I was like, when's he going to step up? Like, he has to go for the drop goal here. And he kept going back and forth. I was behind the post where he's kicking to. And I was like, he has to step up. Like, this is his moment. Like, do you know what I mean? And there was a perfect opportunity where he was directly in front of the post. And he went for one more phase. I was like, no, he bottled it. He's not going to go for it. And then he went for it from the side. And he actually dead ducked it, kind of. But he still got it over the post. And just what a moment for him, man. As you said, he's been a stalwart in Premiership Rugby for how long now? And he got his moment. And he'll be talking about that until the day he dies over a point, I'd say.
Well, nice little clip of him, wasn't it, on Twitter with his sunglasses, and I think he was playing Queen in the background. It's a Premiership trophy to the right.
Oh, he's eating
McDonald's. Like, I mean, that's Championship.
It's absolutely brilliant. And as you're saying, he's a nice guy, look.
Yeah, and as you were saying there, Jason, like, I think it's great. Nothing against Saracens now, but I think it's great that Saracens didn't win the Premiership this year, because obviously the whole wage cap thing, they got knocked out of the Championship, dominated down there, came back up. And if they won the Premiership straight away, it would have been like, they would have been so like, I don't know, like, look at us, we're obviously the best, like, you know, don't knock us down again. So good for Leicester to win it. I think we're a really good culture club. They fought back in the last couple of years to get to where they are now, because a couple of seasons ago, man, they were really bad. Like, they were all over the place.
They were in big trouble.
They're back to who they are now, and I'm just really happy for Leicester as a whole team, like, because I think they have a really good culture, similar enough to us in Munster, like, you know, really good rugby town, like, so delighted for those guys.
It's good to see it, like, I mean, and you can come back venting, like, so like Munster, maybe Munster might come back, win something.
Yeah, listen, there's only room for one miracle per season, so moving on.
Looking at the games outside, we touched on it earlier on, was those two yellow cards. There was one against Saracens, the Saracens 9 in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a pretty bad shoulder to the jaw shot. Straight away, Wayne Barnes is looking for mitigation. The mitigation he said was that it was the ball carrier that came at the force, blah, blah, blah. I'm sorry, no, like, excuse my French, I don't give a shit. It should have been a red card. Mm-hmm. The same thing with the one in the second half. I mean, we can't tiptoe around this and try to look for mitigation. I understand there's mitigation if it starts and does up. They were two direct shots to the chin.
Mm.
There is no mitigation when it's a direct shot to the chin.
Yeah.
And how are we supposed to, like, if they're making different decisions every week and one week it's yellow and one week it's red and one week it's nothing, then what, like, as we said, we're trying to stamp out concussion. We'll get onto that as well later on with the new concussion law, but we're trying to stamp all this out. We're trying to fix rugby. We're trying to make it better, but, like, we can't seem to make up our bloody minds.
Yeah, I think there's obviously, what's the word, not a ruling, but the refs are told to be going out, I think, to look for mitigation now, or, like, get mitigation involved, because it seems to be all season they're going, all right, this is an incident, let's look for mitigation, where, as you're saying there, Jason, I think anything above the neck just needs to be ruled out, because what's it going to take? It's going to take some boy getting, like, knocked out, or some woman getting knocked out fully, to go, okay, maybe we need to just completely just red card this all the time, because it's going to be getting dangerous. These ads are getting bigger, women are getting bigger and stronger, like, someone's going to get decapitated, like, at some stage, like, we need to be careful with this.
Like, so firstly and foremost, top of that is obviously player welfare. But the second bit of it, it's a bit like VAR in the soccer. Like, it really just interrupts the game because everyone's like, because it's your perception or your interpretation of how that went for you. So you're looking at the TMO, then the referee, and then at least if there's a consistent just baseline ruling that it's black or white, it's going to, like, protect everyone. And then you're not having this interruption of the game. It's just like, right, it was above the neck. It's a red. That's the end of the rule. There's no mitigating factors or whatever. Because I just think... You know, there's just too much time around the rule, and it makes it too difficult then. Like, and I can see, like, if you've all, if you look for all these angles, I'd be the same myself. Like, oh, you know, what's the message I'm here? Am I trying to level the game because it's a final? Yeah. Like, it's too difficult every week.
He Wayne Barnes, like, I would expect it more from a guy who, like, I think he was refereeing his 10th Premiership final or something like that. So I think that was the stat in the weekend, but.
It's tough, I mean, for the rest.
It's the biggest. Yeah. It's not just with that, but it's one of the biggest issues that rugby has, and it stops it from becoming a truly global sport. Is there's too many decisions and too many laws that are open to interpretation.
Yes, and it makes it too
just difficult. Destroys the game. Yeah. And we have a bit of kudos to our rugby, like, on that. That the fact that they have finally changed the stand down period for concussion has gone now from it was 7 days, give or take 7 days, six. Now they've added 5 days, so it has 12 days now minimum, which I think is only a step forward, like, and it's something that should have been there a long time ago.
Oh yeah, because the like, you know, a player gone through it, you know, yourself, like, the symptoms for concussion, especially for women now with studies, like, it's the onset, it's different for person to person because it's your makeup, it's your DNA, it's like happens. So the onset is, I don't know how you could do 7 days, and it would have happened for us internationally, the rulings for when we're in international, but then when we're in club, when you're back to kind of like being an amateur player as such, like, is totally different. And even we do the gain line, you know, so you're understanding a concussion at international, and I'm open for question this, but I don't remember doing it ever at club. And to me, at club, you'd need it even more so because there's such indifference with the skill level and skill set. So I just think across the board, education and the longevity of giving players that chance to actually make sure they're symptom free and they're not affected from it, because it's pretty life-threatening if it's a bad...
I've done loads of studies in this, and I did a thesis and I did a documentary on concussion, and, like, it's always been longer at club level. Like, it was whatever it was, like, it's 14 days at, as you're saying, at unprofessional level. But I was like, well, why is it 6 days? Why is it 7 days?
We all have the same brains.
And they keep... Yeah, they're like, no, we've got better medical doctors. We've got better this. Like, so I'm sorry, like, I don't care who you have. As you said, your brain is your brain. If you are concussed... I don't care if you've got some magic doctor or some magic sponge. Just because you're a professional team at the elite level does not mean that this person's brain or skull or whatever it is going to recover quicker.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden they're like, oh, let's make it 12 days, which is what it should have been all along. And it's just, there's more to come out.
It's
like
a big issue with the NFL as well.
And yeah, I think, huge.
Exactly. And medicine is just progressing. And then they go, okay, let's, we better change these laws, which are probably archaic. Like, so to kind of be... a bit empathetic with the with medicine. It's like they're trying to figure it out as well. Like, but I do think what you're saying there, Jason, is mad. Like, just because we've been professional players, myself and Lindsay, doesn't mean our brains are now stronger.
Of course not. You think it could cost the same as anyone else.
Your brain's getting hit. Like, it's just like your brain's rattling your skull. That's it. You're knocked out.
If anything, at that level, you're taking bigger hits.
Yeah.
Like, I remember even like speaking to that neurologist and what he was saying, that some of the hits that take part, that occur in professional rugby, are akin to a car crash.
Yeah, Brian O'Driscoll said that actually. Yeah,
you know, with his and you're like, this is just two men and women on the pitch. Man. Yeah,
them running into each other, bro. Oh my god!
And they were all minimum two man tackle.
Yeah, it's crazy. Ridiculous. It's nuts, bro. It's good to see it's going to 12 days now. I also thought it was mad. Like, obviously, I got loads of concussions. You got loads of concussions as well. Being
I've
able to play,
I've actually had none. Would you believe?
Have you not?
No.
Jeez, I've had loads.
Lucky.
Being able to play within 6 days, even yourself, you're like, this is a bit mad, is it?
Six days is nothing. As I said, you would not be, if you got concussed, you would not probably be allowed back into an office job after 6 days.
You can't
never mind
computer.
A contact sport as brutal as rugby, one of the most physical sports in the world. Yeah. I mean, you break.
I actually did a health and safety cert during the week for using a computer in work. And it was like, oh, if you're having symptoms, you have to go to your OT, your occupational health department. So, I mean, that's just sitting in front of a computer if you're having a bit of a migraine. So imagine with a concussion. Yeah. Were you ever bad with it?
Yeah, I've never had any long-term effects from it, like, but I've had a lot of plenty of concussions. Like, and I'll hold my hand up, as loads of my mates as well that I played with. You get fully like dusted in a game. Like you wake up, you're seeing stars, you're seeing black. But because you're like, no, I have to stay in the game. Like I have to play this game. And you're fully like, for a while, for a few minutes, you won't know where you are in the game. And it's just that, even like that needs to be beat out of players like that. You need to be more thinking long-term, my family, my friends, my long-term life. But that's definitely an issue with rugby players as well. Is like, no, I'm tough. I can just shake this off. Fellas be running around like not knowing where they are. I don't know if it's the same in the women's sport.
Claire Malloy, I'm glad you brought that up. Claire Malloy is a doctor, like an A&E doctor, right? One of the most world-class sevens in the women's game. And I don't know many times. I had one referee, I had to say, ref, when you stop the game, seven got knocked out. We were playing a Grand Slam against England. She was absolutely KO'd. And next of all, I see her run down the wing. And like she was taken off, thankfully. And she went, you see, she's not in her right mind, obviously, because she's concussed and knocked out. And obviously then she's medically trained. So the irony of that whole situation. But like, yeah, it's just the nature of how she played. And obviously then other people. And then I feel, obviously, and she's the medical and there is medical people. But you're more susceptible then to concussion than if you've obviously had long term.
Yeah, 100%. You know. Yeah.
So,
with the counteract, that kind of competitive edge of rugby players on the pitch not wanting to come off is there are fourth officials in the stands that watch the games and they go, for instance, your Malloy there just got knocked out, guys, stop the game, get her off the pitch, like, which is needed, like, because fellas aren't going to come off willingly.
No, and that's when it's like you're a pro, it's your job. So it's inbuilt and you don't want to let anyone down.
The decision has to be taken out of the player's hands. Like, it can't even be anything. Yeah. But the issue you have then as well, which is why they're looking to adapt these mouth guards that actually detect the collision impact. And the impact of the collision, is the fact that when we're looking at these studies and we're looking at this data and we're looking at these games, we're looking at, say, we see a big massive hit and this guy gets knocked into the chain, you go, okay, you're going off for HIA. But what that match doesn't pick up and what that doctor isn't picking up is those 10 or 12 hits that person might have picked up. Now, it might only be medium hits, but every time there's a kind of a shock into the system, your brain slides, it gets leaky, blood comes down. That's the problem, because how many of those can you take in a game?
Absolutely. What's your threshold?
That one big hit that makes it a lot worse.
Yeah.
Do you understand? Like it's very complicated when you get into it, and it's very interesting. But that is the issue that we have, like, as in how many of these hits can you take? And there's guys, maybe they haven't had too many concussions or too many knocks overall, but they're getting constant hits in matches.
Yeah.
Because there is still these high hits going in. Like, so if you just eliminate these, and like the problems we have around the breakdown, the problems you have with high tackles, if you just eliminate that and just go, this is a no-fly zone.
Yeah,
exactly. Stay away from it. Like, we're not, this is not MMA, this is rugby.
Yeah.
This is, you just, everything from here, as you said, from the neck up.
It has to be.
Do you know, otherwise, like, you don't want to get on the road of wearing helmets. Like, and I'm one of those people, I don't agree with helmets. I think helmets actually, anything, make it worse. Because you're more inclined to use your head as a weapon when you
have a helmet. That's what they figured out in the NFL. Yeah, lads are using their heads as, like, to tackle with, because I have your helmet on, I'm grand. Like,
yeah.
But you remember that, like, concussion movie with Will Smith in it?
Yeah.
Where there's a really vivid scene where he has a ball inside a glass, especially it's your brain inside a glass bottle, and he shakes it and the ball rattles off the end of the glass, and he's like, no matter what you put on the outside of this glass, this ball is still rattling against the side, that's your brain inside your skull. And I'll never forget it. I was like, oh my god, my poor little head. It's mad.
I heard a great analogy, and it was off that same doctor. So like, you've seen a lot of people wearing the N Pro scrum caps now, yes. Like, and they're offering, they're saying improve this, improve that, like, and you see Caelan Doris is wearing one now because of concussion problems. A lot of the studies on that, like, can't be backed up and aren't backed up by a lot of medical professionals, but the way he put it to me was, he goes, take a tin of tomatoes, right? Now throw a tin of tomatoes off the wall. Now take another tin of tomatoes and wrap cotton wool around it. Throw it off the wall. Are the tomatoes going to be any less damaged than the first can?
No.
Of course exactly. The tomatoes are still going to be destroyed. Yeah. Do you know? So no matter what you put around your head, no matter how much you protect it, like, it's not going to help because it's the impact. Your brain is still going to get damaged inside your head.
Exactly.
It's still all mushy and soft in there, unfortunately.
100%.
Exactly. So it kind of just comes back to making the tackle laws more strict and it's just red card straight away. But obviously the counter argument to that, we alluded to earlier, is people are going to be like, oh, but you're just going to ruin the game. It's going to be 40 against 15.
Those idiots.
But I think a good way to counteract it, just an idea, is to the guy that's committed the foul, he gets sent off a red card and then the team loses a player for 10 minutes and then you can bring on another player that wasn't the guy that offended. The guy that's offended is sent off forever, goes to
black card.
It gets sent off, he goes to siding and a new guy can come on and put the game back to 15-15 after 10 minutes, which the team has now gotten their punishment and the guy that offended has to go get sided and he can't come back onto the pitch. I think that's a good way to kind of balance it out.
The worry you have there is you're going to have people like it's like playing a bloody game of FIFA or something. You do press the R1, the red card side tackle to stop a goal. He's like, well, should we bring a player back on 10 minutes? This fella's about to score.
Yeah.
Close the way them over the sideline.
You think they'd be like sending a sacrificial lamb? Like,
that's what it was. Well, yeah, you see fellas like being sacrificial lambs, especially forwards, like, will take yellow card sometimes at on their try line, like, to prevent the try kind of goal. It's worth taking the yellow card here to prevent the score. And people do that, like, so that's the thing. You can't win, like, but what you really have to do more than anything, as you said in the beginning, was just to teach these guys.
Educate from the ground up,
educate the kids and bring it in, like, the whole way up, and just, like, the players that are there at the moment, just, like, they have to understand, like, if you go high, you're off.
Yeah.
And stop doing it. You're well out. What do we do every week on this show? We have our jukebox of the week, we have our choice, and we're constantly looking at the tackles. I mean, you see some of the best tackles we've seen, like, are all tackles that are textbook tackles.
Textbook, below the
knee tackles.
They're
the best ones, you know, and like, there's nothing stopping you. Like, I mean, I do understand the last minute kind of slide up and all that kind of stuff, like, but obviously then, like, you're coming into the tackle too high in the first place. Because if you're coming into a tackle upright and you're saying, oh, he dipped it the last minute. Well, if he dipped it the last minute, you still wouldn't have got his head if you came in low enough in the beginning, because there is no excuse there. Like, it's just an excuse is all it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, no, I think no tolerance policy across, and then starts grassroots education.
Definitely.
Great stuff. We'll finish up with some big news. Lindsay, you want to talk about this. The Irish women are heading off to Japan this summer.
It's a great summer tour. It's the first time we've ever done it as a nation. In my time anyway, that I know of. So the lads will go over for a game on the 20th of August and the 27th. And they're going to play in Tokyo. Is definitely one of the games on the 27th. And Fukuoka, is that, am I right with that? The first one. So that's a big, big win for us. But obviously, I'm hoping we'll have some more games kind of from August to April, because obviously the Women's World Cup is on and we're not in it.
Of course.
But, that is the fact that, like we said, like, the lads will have 5 weeks down in New Zealand for Greg Williams and his coaching staff and the players themselves to have, like, I think they're going to have a camp here before they actually travel the 2 weeks to Japan. So that's 3 weeks together to blood new players, to build your culture, to build that camaraderie. And look, no amount of time in camp, you know, week off can do that. So I think it's going to be hopefully the making of a big, you know, big foundations for this journey for this team. Yeah,
I definitely think World Rugby and need to make games for Irish teams, or not just the Irish team, that girls that aren't in the World Cup for that August to April period. Because if there wasn't going to be this Japan tour, girls were going to go from playing the Six Nations to the following Six Nations without playing international rugby again. Am I right saying
100%,
that?
100%, And then next year we have that, like, so our seeding will come into play for the global calendar, which will be in 2023 post that Six Nations.
That's way too long without playing international rugby. How are you supposed to progress after all the talk we've done in this podcast about progressing international women's rugby and not having them play for like a year at international level? Sure. How is that going to work? Like,
it's not. And that's why I think, you know, the two games are unbelievable. Absolutely.
Yeah. So credit to them for doing this.
Yeah, like, credit where it's due. But like,
more games is now needed.
You are absolutely right. If World Rugby want to grow the game like they would have done, and they have done it with the kind of third tier, like the likes of Georgia and some of the like Southern Hemisphere Ireland teams, like to grow the game globally, you need to get those nations investment. They need to get games. They need to be playing, you know, internationally regularly. And that's no more for Ireland, especially.
So it'll just be a money issue stopping them creating like a second level series while the World Cup's going on. Like,
Yeah, I think it's definitely feasible. Obviously, it always comes back to the conundrum for us that the girls are amateur, you know, and, you know, they have jobs. But again, I think with planning and, you know, early, if the players can get it early, I think, you know, employers have been so good. I know my own employer, the health service, have been so good. So I think Ireland as a nation, we're, you know, we're sport lovers, so we would never stand in the way of athletes progressing. You know, we've seen that even in grassroots and GAA. So
yeah, like a women's autumn internationals, I think, just makes a lot of sense.
Could we look at double headers there? Like, we've seen a lot of success in that recent England. We've seen it with the Barbarians, seen England doing it, where they put on double headers where you go, you rock on at 2 o'clock and you get the women to play and then the men play, and you're getting a full day out of it. And
just makes sense.
Sure, we got to play in Twickenham when the poor men got struck down the last time. Yeah, you know, so, and like, we had 1.15 million watches.
So there you go. Like, key. If we do that, like, because Ireland are going to have a couple of games on. Remember as well, like, let's bring it all together and let's make a double header. Like, and it's great excuse for fans, because, like, you get to go out for like 5 or 6 hours and get pissed instead of going out for one. And it's like a baseball game or something. You're out for the full day, like, and you've got two really high quality matches to watch.
But see, this, right, I'm glad you brought this up. One, like, so the conundrum for the women's game is we want to grow it, but the other side is it has to be a product. So to try and do both is a conundrum that, you know, one has to lose out on the other. Do you know, we have to grow the game first before we can make a product. However, if we can start, I've never played in the Aviva.
Yeah.
Funny story, my son, as we were going over, so I'm originally north side, we drive back from Nana's and we go and we see what he calls the railway stadium, which is the Aviva. And he said, "Mama, what sport do they play there?" And I said, "Rugby, baby." And he goes, "And what rugby?" And I said, "Irish rugby." And he said, "But I've seen you play for Ireland." I said, "You have?" And he said, "But I've never seen you play there." Oh. And
yeah,
I said,
yeah,
no, I've never played there. Only the men are allowed to play there. And he said, "That's not fair. Who made that decision?" I want to fume them, you know? And I was like, I know. And like, to him, he's a 6-year-old. And even this morning, I don't know what we came up about. I don't know, a gender pay gap. Now, I don't even know why he asked me that question. And I said,
he brought that up, that topic of conversation.
Something came up about, I said,
kids,
the gender pay.
Clever these days. I'm telling you, like, compared to us when we were younger, like.
Oh, he just said, "What's that mean?" I said, "Well, you're a boy and you get paid more money." And like, this is not, don't get me wrong, I'm just literally telling you a story of a 6-year-old. And he was like, "Well, that's not fair." I was like, listen, if it was only so simple.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Look, my goal, I said this, I think it was an interview in 2019 for the Union Cup, and we did the launch with Nigel Owens
in the
Aviva. It was just fantastic. And I remember my one point was, if there was anything I could have wished for my career, it was just to play once in the Aviva in an Ireland jersey. Yeah. And that's the goal I think we'd love to see for the girls. I'd love to see a double header.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, like, there's no hard, as you said, like, you're trying to build a product, right? Okay. A lot of the time, like, until you watch the game, like, a lot of people are stubborn, like, "I'm not watching the game, I have no interest in it." Then when they watch it, like, "Geez, this is pretty good." But they're not inclined to watch it in the first place. So if you're kind of like, "Well, we're here now, we might as well watch it." And then all of a sudden you'll get new fans. I mean, there's a lot of things I've done in my life, a lot of things we've all done in our lives. Where, like, I don't think I'd like that. Or I don't think I'd eat that. Like, and you're like, "Oh, that's actually pretty good."
Yeah.
And you're like, "Jesus, I'm glad I tried that." So like, you're like, they're going to be in the stadium. It's like, "Lads, show up there a couple hours early." You might not get everyone to show up for it, but you still might get, if there's 55,000 going watching Ireland, maybe 25 of them show up and watch swimming. And then all of a sudden, like, you might get another 5,000 fans out of that. And it might take a couple of years, but they'll piggyback off them. And then the men's team can help them grow their product. And then they go, "Right, so lads, now you can go do your own matches and you can get 20,000 in your own," which is what they've done in England.
Oh, 100.
And they're getting 15,000-20,000 at their games.
Yeah, remember the England-Ireland game in England this year in the Six Nations? It was nearly sold-out stadium, was it?
That was in Leicester Town, because I was at that game. Yeah. And I swear to God, Greg, it was cracking, because Leicester itself is obviously a big rugby hub. And actually, what was funny was I seen like fans that didn't actually necessarily have England jerseys, they had Leicester Tiger jerseys on, and
just
they
came along for the day.
There's a match on here, let's go to
brilliant.
It.
Yeah, the girls were signing jerseys. Now, like, you know, I'm obviously friends with a lot of them. I'm like smacking these kids out of the way, going, "Let me have my friends." But the kids were like, and not even kids, adults, so it was like layers of queues back for them.
Brilliant.
They stayed for about an hour, I'd say, asked for autographs. Just the culture, it was just brilliant.
So building momentum now on top of all that buzz, like, which is great to see these Japanese games happening. Hope more international games come for the women in that gap. But I heard rumors, Lindsay, that, I don't know, you can confirm these, but women's, that they're potentially might be becoming contracts for 15s women. Did you hear any of that? I've heard
it's, yeah, I'm hoping by autumn. The only thing I want is, so Scotland, congratulations to Scotland. They've just contracted 30 players and I think they're bringing 35 to World Cup. So that's key for them in their first World Cup since 2010, that they can go down and actually do a bit of damage. But what I don't want for us is to be under pressure to give contracts when we have to look at the feasibility of it. Like, how many of our girls can actually give up really good jobs you know, are they going to offer part-time? Are they going to retainer contracts for those who actually have built up a career and it wouldn't be feasible for them to actually take a full-time contract and interrupt that?
Yeah, so like the sevens contracts like that you were getting. Like, I mean, if you're on a good job on 40, 50 grand a year, you're going to drop out and get half that money. Like, well, you could pay for Ireland. Yeah, but I still, like, I can't afford to lose half my wages.
Yeah, like you did your law exams. Do you know what I mean? Like, where is the conundrum? Like, you've worked all this hard to be a solicitor. And,
yeah.
And now that's not to, you know, undermine the value of the contracts and how we're progressing. But I just want us to do it right. Like, yeah. I think Wales have given a lot of contracts to players who weren't even in their Six Nations squad. Yeah. Like, that's a waste
we don't
of
want
money.
That. No, but that's not what we want to see. Yeah, as you say, yeah, that's just stupid.
No, so we want to invest when it's right. And then we want to grow the game so that when you invest this money, you can start to generate money. Because if we invest money and we don't have those players coming up, and I'm not a businesswoman, but I mean, you have to build that product. And when you invest the money, you want that money to grow. And I don't think unless we look at the contracts right or make sure it's going to suit us, whatever they may be, even small level and build up, they just have to be done right. But I think they are going to be down. I think we've no choice to keep up with the way, the rate of the growth again.
Well, like if England, France, Wales and now Scotland have all contracted their teams.
And Italy.
If Ireland
and Italy,
want to compete.
Italy done it as well.
We're the only.
Ah, lads.
Yeah, so that's why I think, I have heard that the other few were talking about contracting the women, like, which needs to be done. But it's obviously, you said there's certain ways they need to do it. One, do they, there's something about means testing what girls need if they're coming from like Kerry or they're coming from from South Dublin. But then my argument is that, like, you're not means testing the men, like, just because Tadhg Furlong's coming from wherever and Johnny Sexton's coming from down the road. If they're good enough, pay them. Like, but my other thing is, like, would they not do something like just do 15 centralized contracts, one in each position?
So I think that needs to kind of happen. And then obviously we have our sevens. How are we going to work that after World Cup? Like, obviously the girls hopefully will make the World Cup in South Africa in September.
Yeah.
Like, and then, like, a lot of them players are obviously have been in our 15s program. So how do we balance both?
Yeah. But if you're on a sevens contract, just keep seven. Like, yeah, just keep the girls on the sevens contract. It gives you another free spot to contract another girl in 15s.
100%.
Correct. And obviously the men's sevens then, I think there's chat about that as well. The boys may be getting a bit more because in line with the 15s. So this is all rumours now. That I don't even know any of it's true. But it's great to finally see the IRFU starting to back the women's and the sevens and get them up to the level to compete with the rest of the world.
Like, well, you know yourself, like, you can only facilitate an athlete if you give them the means to develop within that realm. So if we've girls who are so good, they're world class, but they're really world class based on a very, very minimal, you know, investment and time to be that athlete. So that's the other conundrum we'll have. Like you're saying about centralized, I think it's perfect. But like, say, for example, stand out in Players Player of the Year with Sam Monahan. Sam's based in Brighton, playing with Wasps. Yeah. How are we going to get her home?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Adele McMahon, Cliona Maloney. Neve Jones is over there, Catherine Boogie's another prop, Leah Lyons is over there, Lauren Delaney. So we have a load of players that are in England. And I think personally right now, their league is developed enough, but then our league is losing now because our best players aren't there. So there's so much.
I think it's another topic that we could spend hours talking about again. But
yeah, sorry, I got animated. We read the monster. Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm getting given out here. We're out of time. I can't believe, like, it's actually, I could have given Chad so many more points. We had a great crack there. I mean, it was disappointing to lose out in Rob, like, but that was a good chat. No, I think we got through it well.
Yeah, we did. It was great chat. I enjoyed it. I was saying there, I had so many more points to bring up, so I'll have to save until next week.
Come here, we have another show. Our wrap up show next week, guys, so it's going to be a big one.
Tune in.
Wrap up bonanza.
Of course, yeah. No, thanks very much, guys. It was a great chat. And of course, a massive thank you to Bank of Ireland, our partners and proud supporters of the four Irish provinces. We'll catch you next week, guys, for our very last show of the season. And talk to you then.
Joe presents House of Rugby, United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.